Blog Talk Radio.
Live 100. I'm your host, Tahaka Armana L. Bay, and today's topic is Masons and Moors, the relationship between Masons and Moors, and we will also be coming to you today from some excerpts from The Moors in Spain that was written by Stanley Lane Poole. But we're going to start off with an article taken directly from Tahaka's archives. And this article was written by a very, very prominent gentleman. However, before we get started in this, let me give you some access to me. You can reach me at tahaka99@yahoo.com, or you can phone me after 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time at area code 904-303-9061. I would also like to give a shout-out to my brother, Reason, in Seattle, Washington, for the acquisition of his archives. And keep in mind, ladies and gentlemen, we have created one of the most comprehensive archives in the Western Hemisphere. It's available to you. And you simply access that by contacting me at the above addresses and numbers that I just gave you. But let's go ahead and get right on into today's broadcast so that we can share some light on some things and clear up some things involving the Masons and the Moors and the origin of Moorish science. I would also like to add that next week, on the 13th, November the 13th, we will be hosting our first two-hour broadcast on Blog Talk Radio, so be sure to tune in to that, and we will have special guests that will be on board as well. We'll make the announcement and send out all the necessary information, so make sure you check the email box for that. And also, we'll, at the outside, I want to offer our free articles for you today. You can access the 14th Amendment Exposed, and we're also giving you the Commerce Game and how to play. So if you'd like to receive that, just send me an email. Just say, I'd like the free articles you mentioned on the 14th Amendment Exposed in the Commerce Game, and I'll get that to you very, very quickly. But let's delve on into this, and this article is entitled Mason and the Moors, and it states here, the involvement of Freemasons in the establishment of the United States of America is well documented. In fact, Masons featured so prominently in drafting the American Declaration of Independence that many people believe it a thoroughly mosaic Masonic project. Not only George Washington, but also the U.S. Founding Fathers, Benjamin Franklin, Thomas Jefferson, were high-degree Masons. Masonry had a profound influence on the formation of the American society, but there was also another secret power which has gone completely unnoticed. The Kingdom of Morocco, under the leadership of Sidi Mohammed bin Abdullah, known as the King of Mohammed III, was the first country in the world to recognize the United States of America as an independent nation in 1777. Now, this historic act by North African Muslim Kingdom highlights the relationship then existing between America's Masonic leaders and the Moors. Before exploring the strange connection further, we need to understand the part played by the Moors in the transmission of knowledge to Europe. Now, I want to stop right there, and we're going to go over, because I've already stated previously in the broadcast that in previous broadcasts that a lot of people are under the impression that Europeans have brought the light of knowledge to the world. But I want to read a passage to you that was written by Stanley Lane Poole in his book, The Moors in Spain, so that we can get a clear understanding of who brought the light to who and when and where. He states here in the opening paragraph of the introduction, it says that Eurocentric historians argue that Europe gave civilization to Africa, which is a complete inversion of the truth. The first civilized Europeans were the Greeks, who were chiefly civilized by Africans of the Nile Valley. The Greeks transmitted this culture to the Romans, who finally lost it, bringing on the Dark Age of 500 years. Civilization was restored to Europe when another group of Africans, the Moors, brought the Dark Ages to an end, meanwhile re-civilizing the Christian barbarians of Europe. Now, let's get a clear degree, a clear extent of the degree the condition of the Europeans prior to the Moors bringing the light of knowledge to them. It's stated here in the chapter, The Palace of the Sultan, on page 135 in this book, The Moors in Spain. It stated, was spanned by a noble bridge of 17 arches, which still testifies to the engineering powers of the Arabs. The whole city was full of noble buildings, among which were counted more than 50,000 houses of aristocracy and official classes, more than 100,000 dwellings for common people, 700 mass and 900 public baths. The last were an important feature in all Muslim towns, for among the Mohammedans, cleanliness is not next to godliness, but is an essential preparation for any act of prayer or devotion. While the medieval Christians forbade washing as a heathen custom, and the monks and nuns boasted of their filthiness, insomuch that a lady saint recorded with pride the fact that up to the age of 60, she had never washed any part of her body except the tips of her fingers when she was going to take the mass. While dirt was the characteristic of Christian sanctity, the Muslims were careful in the most minute particulars of cleanliness. And he goes on to say, they dared not approach the God until their bodies were purified. When Spain had at least been restored to Christian rulers, Philip II, the husband of our English Queen Mary, ordered the destruction of all public baths on the grounds that they were relics of infidelity. Now, that goes to show you that any time that you hear someone tell you that Europeans brought the light of knowledge to the world, to Africa and the world, we have this record that clearly states and shows the condition that they were in during the Moorish occupation and what transpired after the Moors were expelled from Spain. And so I just wanted to add that before we go any further about the relationship of the Masons and the Moors. Moor in the classical name in Europe of the Muslim people of North Africa and Spain, where Muslims ruled for over 500 years, Arabs are still called Moros. The term Moor come to the synonymous with Muslim in many contexts. For example, the Muslim communities in the Philippines are known to this day as Moros. The supreme wisdom of the Moors, much of it derived from ancient Egypt, has come to be known as Moorish science. The Moors provided the vital link between ancient and modern civilization. The light of knowledge which illuminated the Moors' lands of Spain and Sicily was instrumental in dispensing the gloom of ignorance that enveloped medieval Europe. And we are reading directly from the Masons and Moors now. It was under the influence of Arabia and Moorish rival of culture, writes Robert Briffle in The Making of Humanity, and not in the 15th century that the real Renaissance took place. Spain and not Italy was the cradle of the rebirth of Europe. After sinking lower and lower in barbarism, it had reached the darkest depths of ignorance and degradation when the cities of the Saracenic world, Baghdad, Cairo, Cordova, Toledo, was growing centers of civilization and intellectual activity. It was there that the new life across which was to grow into a new phase of human evolution. From the time when the influence of the culture made itself felt, began the stirring of a new life. Now, I just wanted to add that information, that bit of information, and I'm going to say a few more things taken directly from Stanley Lane Poole's "The Moors in Spain." But we're gonna deal with one thing here. Let's deal directly with the word Negro. The word Negro was manufactured during the Atlantic slave trade. Or to put it another way, there are many species of small fish in the ocean. When put into a can, they are called sardines. There are no free fish called sardines. They only get the name when canned. No free Africans were called Negroes. They got that name only after being enslaved. A fish becomes a sardine when imprisoned in a can, and Africans become Negroes when they were put into chains. According to American law, anybody with an African ancestry, however remote, is a Negro. To follow this logic, since the human race originated in Africa, everyone in the world is a Negro. A word so vague as this does not mean anything at all. Now, being enslaved, and the process is continuing to go on today, and we've discussed this in previous broadcasts as being 14th Amendment citizens and not proclaiming your nationality, which it puts you on the road to becoming free and becoming not like the sardines, not like the Africans in chains. You want to remove the chains from your mind so that you can exercise and live the remaining of your days as a free man with a nationality. In the country of your ancestors in which you were born. The lie is that all of us came here as a result of slavery, and those who are Moors are still considered by the enslavers as slaves until we prove otherwise. But if we're going to invest in proving otherwise, I suggest that we get paid for doing that if we have to file a tremendous lawsuit to do so. Now, let's move forward and going on to the next thing here. We're still coming to you from Masons and the Moors. I'm going to eventually get to the relationship, but I'm giving you the background information just so that you will understand what has transpired, what led up to, and the foundation of where Masonry came from and who are the original true Masons and where Moorish science, what part Moorish science prominently plays in the Masonic situation here in the United States and abroad. Now, I'm going on to read here. It says here, the Orientalist Stanley Lane Poole acknowledged the great impact Moorish civilizations had on Europe when he wrote, "For nearly eight centuries under her Muslim rulers, Spain set to all Europe a shining example of a civilized and enlightened state. All literature and science prospered, as they then prospered nowhere else in Europe. Students flocked from France and Germany and England to drink from the fountains and fountains of learning, which flowed only in the cities of the Moors. The surgeon and doctors of Andalusia were in the vanguard of science. Women were encouraged to devote themselves to serious study, and a lady doctor was not unknown among the people of Cordoba. The 19th century French writer on esoteric science, Geraldine Cousy, known as Papus, noticed how the Gnostic sects, the Arabs, alchemists, Templars, from a chain of transmitted ancient wisdom to the West. This explains why within the ritual of Freemasonry, there is the admission we came from the East and proceeded to the West. A Masonic author, Bernard H. Spingett, says the plain fact that much of what we now look upon almost entirely as Freemasonry has been practiced as part and parcel of the religion of the Middle East for many thousands of years lies open for anyone who cares to stop and read instead of running by, but it is frequently and scornfully rejected by the average Masonic student. So we find that just as Europe borrowed considerably from the learning of the Moors, European Freemasonry took its secret wisdom from the Muslim East. With the end of the Moorish rule in Spain, the Europeans began to colonize Africa, Asia, and colonize the Americas. In the time European Christians conquered Muslim territory and the great debt Western civilization owed to the Moors was quickly forgotten, by the 18th century, European Christians saw themselves as the predestined rulers of the world with a divine mission to civilize the heathen. That's amazing. Western historians conveniently ignored the immense contribution of the brilliant and enigmatic Moorish civilization in delivering Europe for medieval barbarism. We can only conclude this is a result of the pride and presumption of Westerners, which prevent them from recognizing the truth or importance of their debt to the East. Now, we can see this sort of thing going on all over the United States among descendants of the people who were enslavers of the African people and enslavers of other people around the world today. They're under some, it seems, some type of mental spell as to actually believe that they brought civilization to the world. But they didn't. As early as 10th century, according to Stanley Lane Poole, and we're going to get that in a second, Europe was illiterate. You had kings and queens who could never, who could neither read nor write. So how could it be possible that you having this background and foundation consider yourself supreme, in your words, supremacist? I need to know you're supreme according to who? According to what? How? That's impossible. So let's go on here and let's take a look at what Stanley Lane Poole has to say about the situation in his introduction. He states the following. The mineral wealth of the land was not disregarded. Copper, gold, silver, tin, lead, iron, quicksilver, and alum were extensively mined by the Moors. The swords of the blades of Toledo were the finest in Europe, and factories in Murcia turned out the finest brass and iron instruments. The tanneries of Cordoba and Morocco City were the best in the world, and Almeria specialized in making of sashes, famed for their fine textures and brilliant colors. Carpets were made in Tulula, and bright-hued woolens in Granada and Baza. Moorish artisans also produced high-quality glass and pottery vases, mosaics, and jewelry. Cordoba was the most wonderful city of the 10th century. The streets were well-paved and raised sidewalks for pedestrians at night. 10 miles of streets were well illuminated by lamps. This was hundreds of years before there was a paved street in Paris or a street lamp in London. Cordoba, with a population of at least 1 million, was served by 4,000 public markets and 5,000 meals. Public baths numbered in the hundreds. The amenity was present at a time when cleanliness in Christian Europe was regarded as a sin. Moorish monarchs dwelled in splendid palaces, while the crowned heads of England, France, Germany lived in big barns lacking both windows and chimneys, with only a hole in the roof for the emission of smoke. Education was universal in Moorish Spain, available to the most humble, while in Christian Europe, 99% of the populace were illiterate, and even kings could neither read nor write. In the 10th and 11th centuries, public libraries in Europe were non-existent, while Moorish Spain could boast of more than 70, of which the one in Cordova housed 600,000 manuscripts. Christian Europe contained only two universities of any value, while in Moorish Spain there were 17 great universities. The finest of these were located in Almeria, Cordova, Granada, Juan, Malaga, Seville, and Toledo. Now, this is a clear description of what Moorish Spain looked like prior to the Moors being expelled from Spain. And we're going to go forward now with the article for Mason the Moors. And before I do that, I want to give a little quick break here and say for those of you who are just tuning in, I'm Tahaka Amane LB. You're listening to Moorish Talk Live 100. Today's topic is Masons and the Moors. And for those of you who like to contact me, you can reach me at tahaka99@yahoo.com, or you can contact me after 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time at area code 904-303-9061. And I would like to encourage you all to send for our free articles, the 14th Amendment Exposed and the Commerce Game, so you can get on with the business of making the transformation from slavery to freedom by becoming aware of what is taking place involving your birth certificate, your birth bond, the Social Security, and all of this stuff here. And we lay it all out for you so that you can be free from this thing. And also keep in mind that we have created one of the most comprehensive libraries of the 20th century, and you can access that by contacting me at the above address. So please send your requests, your Facebook requests, friend requests, and I'll go ahead and honor that, and we can take forward from there. And you can go to my wall, and you can get your studies on there and look at the videos that are posted there for you for your educational purpose. And also, one other thing, for all of the brothers that and sisters who have already taken advantage of your archives, I know you're well on your way toward freedom, and I just ask that you continue in deep study, and we'll continue to add information for you. I want to recommend that you purchase the book. Now, in this book, I don't have any stock in. This is a book called The Moors in Spain by Stanley Lane Poole. Once again, The Moors in Spain by Stanley Lane Poole. We're coming to you today from an article taken directly from Tahaka's archives. It's called The Masons and the Moors, and we're dealing with the relationship between the Masons and the Moors, and we're also creating the foundation so you'll know where the Masonic originated from, where the Masons and the whole ball of wax originated from, and where they got it from, and who the original Masons are. The word free Moor simply means Freemason, which is automatic an entitlement. Those who are born on this landmass, who are original and aboriginal and indigenous to this landmass, Moors, Freemason Moors. The founders of the American Republic as high-degree Freemasons were aware of the importance of Moorish wisdom and the culture to the birth of Western civilization. This may explain why Morocco was the first nation in history to recognize the United States, and what really behind the story of George Washington being presented with a Moorish flag. Some researchers believe this flag consisted of a red background with a green five-pointed star in the center of it. The star of the pentagram, which the Moors called the seal of Suleiman, and colored green near honor Islam, also figures prominently in Masonic art and architecture. The layout of the city of Washington, D.C., designed by Freemasons, incorporates the pentagram. When Freemasons traveled in the Moorish lands and encountered Sufis, the mystics of Islam, they soon recognized a common bond. Sufism, said Sir Richard Burton, was the Eastern parent of Freemasonry. John Porter Brown, an American diplomat in Turkey in the mid-1800s, was a Freemason who wrote sympathetically of the Sufi path. In the Dervishes, he admits finding it rather strange that the Dervishes of the Bektashi order consider themselves quite the same as the Freemasons and are disposed to fraternize with them. Brown commented how in Turkey Freemasonry had come to be generally regarded as atheism of the most condemnable character, a position not unlike the one held by Papas and the celebrated French occultist and Gnostic bishop who tried to counter the Masonic lodges, which he believed were in the service of British imperialism and the international financial syndicates. Papas also viewed Freemasonry as a diabolical perversion of the ancient secret tradition of atheists at heart. This is amazing how things can get kind of twisted. And that's why it's so important for us to go ahead and study our culture and our history so we can know what is what and have the truth involved in what situations we're dealing with. When Madame Blavatsky, in 1831 and 1891, set out in search of the hidden wisdom, it was to the Moorish land of Egypt that she journeyed. Blavatsky claimed to be a disciple of the masters of Moria and Kut Homi. The research K. Paul Johnson conveniently shows her tales of the masters to be modeled on real people. Many genuine occult adepts, prominent among them Jamal Abdin al-Afrikani, a Sufi scholar, tireless political intriguer, and the leader of radical movements throughout the Muslim world whose travels enigmatically paralleled those of Madame Blavatsky for more than 30 years. But remember, for co-founding the Theosophical Society and helping to popularize Buddhism and Hinduism in the West, Blavatsky also prized the role of living with with the whirling Dervishes, with the Druids of Mount Lebanon, with the Bedouin Arabs and the Marubus of Damascus. Okay, now, so once again we see where the foundation of Freemasonry was taken, and today is being held as a Eurocentric beginning with a Eurocentric beginning, a Eurocentric origin. If you're a Mason, then you somehow became a Mason, which is a Eurocentric idea. But all of this is foolishness. It is an impossibility for a nation who could neither read nor write as early as the 10th century to come up with anything and to claim it as their own. So I just wanted to put that in, and at this point here, I'm going to go on in and see if I can finish this thing up. It says here, Madame Blavatsky's masters are very close to the Sufi tradition, the Persian masters. Ernest Scott states the Khawajan teachers are entirely corporeal and literal, having been physically located in the Hindu Kush areas. The Hindu Himalaya, Scott quotes in a paper of the Turkish writer who described new members of the Khawajan. Now, we want to stop there, and I want to get on over here because the clock on the wall said that that's all. And don't forget, ladies and gentlemen, next Sunday we will be hosting our two-hour broadcast for the first time, and I need you all to tune in. And we'll be able to let you speak to the guests and answer your calls and all of this stuff. Until next time, I've been your host, Tahaka Amari Elkins.
about